We're back on the record. Mr. Farah, my name is Charles Chandler. I'm the presiding officer in these hearings. Having been appointed by the Minister Secretary of State on October 5th. We opened the hearing of today's process at 10, suspended, waiting your attendance. Do you understand that these hearings, in fact, are open, that they are being recorded, and that if you choose to go forward with testimony, you will be under oath?
Yes.
Raise your right hand, please. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give in the matter now pending will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Mr. Farah, for the record, would you state your name, spelling your last name?
Scott Farah, F-A-R-A-H.
Mr. Farah, I'm going to be turning the initial questioning over to Attorney Jeffrey Spill. Mr. Spill, are you ready?
Yes, good morning, Mr.
Please, please proceed.
Thank you for coming today. And for the record, you came voluntarily, correct?
That is correct.
What is your current age?
47.
And could you describe your background for us, starting with your educational history and then going into your work history?
I graduated from Oral Roberts University in 1985. Post Oral Roberts University, I got two financial planning degrees from American College in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, at CHFC and the CLU. And I went to work out of college for about a year for an insurance company in Oklahoma, then moved back to New Hampshire and began working for Don Dodge, worked for him for 3 years, and then started Financial Resources in 1989.
What's a CFC and a CLU?
CHFC is a chartered financial consultant. CLU is a certified life underwriter.
Okay. Did you ever hold a securities license?
I did.
When was that?
In the 2000s. I'm not sure exactly when.
You were a licensed securities agent?
I got a Series 6 and a Series 63.
And how long did you hold those licenses for?
A few years. I don't remember exactly the years.
Okay. Can you give me the approximate time that they lapsed?
I believe I let them lapse after November of 2009. May have been earlier than that. I just don't remember.
During that time period, did you work for a broker-dealer?
Yes, it was a license that I never actually sold any securities. I got the license, and I was going to be doing some variable life insurance, and I never actually sold any. So I don't know that I ever actually used the license.
Well, so then you didn't renew it?
No.
So when did it lapse?
I don't recall, Mr. Spill. I'm sorry.
When did you stop renewing it?
Again, I don't recall. It would have been sometime in the 2000s, but I just don't know what year.
Did you know Don Dodge prior to you working for him?
Yes. I first met Don when I was 12 years old.
And how did you come to know him?
He attended the same church as my family did.
What church was that?
Laconia Christian Fellowship.
And what was the time period?
1976 is when we first started attending, and Mr. Dodge was already a member at that point.
And what was the time period that you worked for him?
I believe it was 86 till 89.
And what year did you start Financial Resources?
Sorry, I forgot to shut this off. In 1989.
And who were the original owners of Financial Resources?
Donald Dodge, William Pearl, Robert Farah, and myself.
During the time period that you worked for Mr. Dodge, did you maintain a social relationship with him?
Yes.
And was that true all the way up until the collapse of Financial Resources in 2009?
Yes.
What was your involvement in the church? Take us through that, beginning with Laconia Christian Fellowship to 2009.
I was just a kid. My family went to Laconia Christian Fellowship. And then after I left for college, my father founded his own church. It was mid-80s.
And was Mr. Dodge a member of that church?
For a brief period, for a few years, yes.
What was the name of that church?
Center Harbor Christian Fellowship.
Where was it located?
Center Harbor, New Hampshire.
And where was Financial Resources located?
Originally in Guilford, New Hampshire.
And did it move after that?
Yes, we moved to Meredith in, I don't even remember what year, in the 90s.
Prior to starting Financial Resources, did you have experience in the mortgage business?
I did some mortgage business while I was a member of, while I was working for Don Dodge.
What was your involvement?
I actually did all the mortgages for any of the clients of Don's company, D.E. Dodge and Associates.
What do you mean you did? You did the
mortgage? Brokered.
Broker?
Yes.
Did you have a brokerage license?
Yes. I was not, an individual license was not required at that point in time, just a company license. And Don's company got a mortgage brokering license thing.
What type of business did Financial Resources do?
Mortgages.
Can you describe the business model of Financial Resources when you started it?
Primarily a mortgage brokerage firm.
Did you also issue unsecured notes?
Yes.
Okay. And when I say unsecured, I mean not attached to a mortgage or any type of collateral.
That's correct.
And a mortgage, on the other hand, would be considered a secured loan, correct?
Correct.
What forms would the mortgage business take in terms of how the mortgages were put together?
I can you be a little more clear?
Were you the mortgage holder or broker, or how were the parties brought together?
The majority of the business, we functioned as a broker.
Did you act as a mortgage holder?
Occasionally. Financial Resources acted as a mortgage holder, but the vast majority of the business was brokerage.
Okay. And what was the source of money for the brokered loans?
Generally private individuals.
Okay. Were those loans termed hard money loans?
Generally, yes.
Okay. What is a hard money loan?
A hard money loan is a loan that a higher risk loan, higher interest rate, usually a non-conforming loan. It doesn't meet normal banking guidelines.
Okay, and generally during this time period, let's say late 1980s through the 90s, what was the interest rate?
In the 10 to 14% range.
Okay, was that fairly consistent all the way through to the end of Financial Resources?
Fairly consistent, yes.
So if someone was offered, a borrower was offered a loan at that interest rate, would you consider it too good to be true?
No, it's an industry standard. There are literally trillions of dollars, well, billions of dollars of hard money loans done every year in that interest rate range.
During the time period in the 1990s into the early 2000s, were you a land developer?
certainly did some land development throughout the whole time.
Okay, when you say you did it, what was your involvement?
Mostly from a paperwork standpoint, helping to raise money, helping with whatever needed to be done from a paperwork standpoint.
So would you say your role was a financer?
Certainly.
I mean, you weren't swinging a hammer, right?
No, sir.
You weren't digging a ditch, right?
No.
Did you design any subdivisions?
No, we would hire somebody to do that.
Okay. With respect to the unsecured notes, what was the model used for the unsecured notes?
Generally, the unsecured notes were used for two purposes, either general business purposes or for financial resources to do to own mortgages and or factor loans or to lend for financial resources to have funds to lend.
Was National Inspection and Repair a factoring program?
Yes, it was.
Was Creative Courier a factoring program?
Yes.
The holders of these notes, did they have any preconceived idea of where the money was going to go?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It was a case-by-case situation.
Okay, in the no scenarios, what do you think they believed?
Again, some of them, we're talking an awful lot of years ago. I believe that some believe they were doing stuff with just financial resources as a whole. Some monies were going into into notes and mortgages and factoring it. I don't know whatever. I mean, that's what I would tell people. So,
okay, you're tending to mumble. Could you try and speak up a little bit?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I didn't catch the last part of that.
I don't recall specifics of what I said back in, we're talking 15 years ago, but I did, as a general rule, would be telling people that we were putting money in factoring, in mortgages, and in financial resources in general.
Okay. With respect to the way the money was brought into financial resources, did you give anything in exchange other than an unsecured note?
Generally, no. Sometimes they would be where we would actually sell a specific mortgage and that would be assigned. But if we're talking back pre-2005, I'm assuming, then generally no.
Did you distribute shares of the company?
As a separate, yes, we did prefer shares.
Okay. And how did you, can you describe how that was done?
Just they were shares of preferred stock that paid a 12% preferred dividend.
And with respect to the mortgage business and the unsecured notes, the factoring, and the shareholders, did you keep track of all that?
Yes.
How did you do that?
With the mainly in the checkbook, but then I had a register that had a list of all the preferred shareholders, and we had a book, just books.
Who kept the books?
Generally, I did.
What types of licenses did Financial Resources have?
Mortgage broker and mortgage banker.
And what is a mortgage broker?
Mortgage broker allows an entity to function as a middleman between a lender and a borrower.
And a mortgage banker is?
An entity that can actually lend money.
And did Don Dodge help you get licensed?
Back in his company was licensed. No, I did the licensing on my own back in 1989.
Why was Don Dodge an owner of the company?
Because it came as an outgrowth of his working for him, and that's how Financial Resources started.
Now, who else was an owner of the company at its inception?
William Pearl, who was another person that worked with Don and I and my father.
Okay. Eventually, did they carry on as owners, or did their role change?
Sometime in the early 2000s, sometime in the 90s, in the early to mid-90s, I bought out all three of them.
Did you do any loan servicing?
Yes.
What types of loans would you service?
Mortgages and factory loans.
And did you charge for those services?
Generally, no.
Excuse me?
No.
Okay. What about commercial lending versus residential lending? Did you do both?
Yes.
Okay. When you first started the business, what was the percentage breakdown, approximately?
Probably commercial, gross dollars, probably commercial was 25% to 30% of the, of course there'd be fewer loans because the loan sizes would be smaller on residential than commercial.
So residential was 75%?
Approximately.
Can you tell us what simultaneous closings are and or table funding?
Simultaneous closing or table funding is, as an example, if a loan was closed in Financial Resources' name and at the table, at the time of the closing, that loan was assigned to another entity, whether that's an individual or a company, that's table funding. And Financial Resources, under that example, would not use any of their own money. The monies would be coming from the third party that was purchasing the mortgage.
And the mortgage would be assigned to the third party?
At the table, and that's thus the name table funding.
And how much of that activity was taking place, say, in the 90s?
Quite a bit. I couldn't tell you percentages, but quite a bit of it was.
Were you, during that time period, were you utilizing the trust mechanism to distribute the loans?
No.
Okay, were these more or less direct lender-borrower loans?
Yes.
Okay. And you were also using traditional sources of finances, such as a bank?
Yes.
Which banks were you doing business with?
Throughout the course of Financial Resources, we did lending brokerage for literally over hundreds of banks. So I don't mean to be vague, there's just a lot of them.
Let's fast forward to the year approximately 2000 to 2005. Did you get entangled in litigation?
Yes.
Okay. Who were you entangled in litigation with?
I believe it was the Stone case that was in that period of time.
Okay. And when did that case start?
I don't remember. It was in that period. I want to say 04, 05. I'm not sure exactly when.
Okay. And does the company National Inspection Repair sound familiar to you?
Yes.
Okay. Were you entangled with litigation in National Inspection Repair?
We sued National Inspection Repair because they owed $600,000.
Okay. And when did you file suit?
I don't know. It was in that time frame. I don't know the exact date.
Okay. Was that one of the factoring notes that you described earlier?
Yes.
Did you lend money to National Inspection Repair?
Financial Resources did, yes.
Okay. Did you promise to lend money to National Inspection Repair but not make the loan?
Yes and no. We loaned a lot of money to National Inspection Repair. They wanted additional funds. We put out a conditional letter that said that you needed to provide additional receivables. They never provided additional receivables, so we did not lend additional money.
Were you countersued by National Inspection and Repair?
After we won the suit here in New Hampshire, when we went to go collect in Kansas, we were countersued.
Okay. What is National Inspection Repair?
They do inspections of dams and such like that, and that's what they do. And they get large receivables, usually governmental receivables, which take a long time to pay.
So that's an actual business that exists?
As the last time I knew, which was October of 2009, they were up and functioning.
Were you entangled in litigation with an attorney, Lattice?
Way back. I thought that was in the 90s.
If I told you that it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, would that ring a bell for you?
Yes.
Okay. And what was that litigation about?
There was a lady by the name of Mrs. Gabrielson, I believe that was her name, that had lent approximately $50,000 to a restaurant down in the Weirs. I don't remember the name. The money had gone through financial resources account. There was not an assignment put on record, and so when the restaurant went under, Lattice sued financial resources to get the $50,000.
Okay. Was that considered an unsecured note or a secured note?
It was supposed to have been a secured note because it was not supposed to have been a loan from two financial resources, but the mortgage never got assigned.
Okay. With respect to, before I ask that question, did you get entangled with legal disputes with the Bureau of Securities Regulation?
I didn't realize that was a legal dispute. Yes, we did get, in that time frame, we did get involved with the New Hampshire Bureau of Securities.
Okay. And did the Bureau file a complaint against you?
I don't know.
And you had various attorneys assisting you in these litigation matters, correct?
Yes.
Is it fair to say that you were spending a considerable amount of money on litigation?
Yes.
Okay. Is it fair to say that you were spending in the hundreds of thousands of dollars on litigation?
Over a period of a number of years, yes.
With respect to your entanglement with the Bureau, did you take the position that certain information was confidential?
Yes.
And what information was that?
Information about borrowers and clients, the different clients in the different files.
And in fact, your attorney directed the Bureau to the banking department to try and get that information, correct?
That is correct.
When did the law firm of Gallagher, Callahan, and Cottrell come to represent you?
It was in the 2000s. I don't know exactly when.
Okay. And did you work with attorney Dennis Maloney from that firm?
Yes.
Okay. What was the goal in working with attorney Maloney?
To handle the situation with the New Hampshire Bureau of Securities.
Okay. Were you also working with an accountant by the name of Mr. Connor?
Yes.
Okay. What was his role?
To provide financials for us so that we could get FHA licenses and some other licenses.
When did you first hire Mr. Connor?
I don't know. Early 2000s, but I'm not sure exactly when.
As part of that engagement, was he putting together audited financial statements?
Yes.
And when did the first audited financial statements be produced?
Early 2000s. I don't know exactly when.
Were those audited?
Would you suspend for just a minute? I'm going to ask the camera to go not proceed beyond attorney Forsey. Please continue.
Can I get someone?
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Spill?
Okay. Were you working with Mr. Connor to identify the unsecured notes?
That was part of the audit, yes.
Was there some difficulty in identifying who were unsecured note holders?
I don't recall whether there was or was not.
Was Were you working with Mr. Connor to identify the amount you owed to unsecured note holders?
Yes.
Were you working with Mr. Connor to identify how much you owed shareholders?
Yes.
Okay. Approximately how much in the early 2000s do you recall Financial Resources owing unsecured note holders?
I believe the total was somewhere between $2 and $3 million, but I just don't know exactly without having the records.
Okay, so is it fair to say that Financial Resources was in debt in the early 2000s?
Yes.
Do you believe that was the total amount of the debt?
Probably not. I'm not. It's we're talking about a 5-year span here. I don't have any records in front of me to talk off of to give you exact numbers.
Did you settle the Lattice matter in the fall of 2001?
I don't know the exact dates, but I did settle the Lattice matter, yes.
Okay. As part of that settlement, was Attorney Lattice to submit a request to withdraw their complaint with the Bureau?
Yes.
Okay. Did that happen?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
I want to show you a letter that you wrote to the Bureau in, I believe it was November 2001. Can you read that letter?
Thank you. Okay.
What does that letter say? You don't have to read it word for word, but what is the intent of that letter?
The intent of the letter was that I was surprised that the securities people had contacted me at all, because Lattice was supposed to have sent a letter withdrawing any complaint.
Okay. Now, when you say you were surprised, were you surprised by the fact that the Bureau filed an action against Financial Resources?
Yes.
I'd like to have that introduced.
The rules of evidence do not apply in this hearing, and so we aren't held strictly to those parcels or pieces of evidence that may or may not be allowed in a traditional court proceeding. But if something is offered in evidence that may approach, say, hearsay, I will attach whatever probative value I deem appropriate in my deliberation. So you are entitled to testify in matters that you may not otherwise be in, say, a traditional court proceeding.
Okay. Thank you.
Bill, do you want to move back for any further questions?
No. Thank you.
Item 63.
With respect to the unsecured notes, you previously testified that you were working with your accountant and attorney to assemble those notes, account for them, and identify the debt owed, correct?
Yes.
Was any advice given to you with respect to those notes?
Not that I can specifically recall.
During the 2000s time frame, were you attempting to eliminate that debt?
Yes.
And how are you going to do that?
Vis-a-vis business and borrowing of some sort. The combination of the two is how I was planning on eliminating it.
And how would you mechanically eliminate that debt? In other words, were you going to pay the note off?
Yes. As I paid off either promissory notes or preferred shareholders, I would send copies of the check to, I believe, to Attorney Maloney, and then he would pass that on to the securities offices.
Okay. Do you recall engaging the Bureau in a hearing in July of 2003?
I don't. You mean?
A hearing with respect to its complaint against you.
Oh.
Against Financial Resources.
Yes.
Okay. Up until that time, 2003, had you eliminated any of the debt?
I do not know. Okay. Without records in front of me.
Following the hearing in 2003, did you attempt to eliminate any of the debt?
Yes.
Okay, and how are you doing that?
Through either personal borrowing or income from the company.
Okay, can you describe for the presiding officer the progress of the elimination of that debt over time?
It mostly was eliminated post 2005. That was when the bulk of it was eliminated, I believe. I don't have, again, how many paperwork in front of me, look at dates.
Just give me the best of your recollection.
Best of my recollection was post 2005.
After the hearing in 2003, did you continue to engage Attorney Maloney?
Yes.
Did you continue to work with Attorney Maloney to change your business model?
Yes.
Okay, how is your business model going to change?
The changeover was going to be, instead of having a promissory note or preferred stock to Financial Resources, that if a private individual wanted to do some mortgages, they would be assigned directly to a specific mortgage.
Mr. Spill, I ask you to suspend.
Okay, so is it fair to say that instead of taking the debt under the note in the name of the company, the debt was given in the name of the borrower?
On a mortgage or a receivable, yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the money was owed to the private lender?
Correct.
Are you familiar with the company CL&M?
Yes.
Okay. When did that company come into being?
I believe it was 2005.
And why was that company formed?
Two reasons. One is to service private mortgages, and the other was to allow a line of credit to be set up for paying off of the debt.
What debt are you referring to?
The debt of Financial Resources, the preferred shares, and preferred stock and promissory notes.
Did your accountant, Mr. Connor, know about CL&M?
No. I'm only very peripherally.
Did your attorney, Mr. Maloney, know about CL&M?
Only in a very peripheral manner, if at all.
Was CL&M regulated by the state of New Hampshire, to your knowledge?
No.
Did you set up CL&M for the purpose of evading regulation?
Partially. Partially for servicing and partially for evading regulation.
Did you set up CL&M for the purpose of eliminating the debt on the books of Financial Resources?
Partially, yes.
Did you form CL&M to develop real estate?
No.
Did you form CL&M to aid you in the development of real estate?
Yes.
And who ran CLNF?
Don Dodge.
And the company was formed in June of 2005, correct?
I believe so.
You mentioned an individual by the name of Stone earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Who was Stone?
Stone was one of the individuals that had lent money to Financial Resources prior to 2005, and they wanted their funds back and sued Financial Resources, and we got them their funds back.
Your voice tends to trail off.
Sorry. They had sued Financial Resources, I'm not sure what year it was, to get their investment back, and they were paid off.
Okay. Were they engaged in the NIR factoring program?
Yes.
Who represented NIR?
Chris Carter.
And who represented the Stones?
Chris Carter.
Does the name Hannigan ring a bell to you?
Yes.
Okay, how does that ring a bell to you?
Hannigans were a family that I've known for, 30 plus years.
Were they also engaged in the NIR program?
Yes, but they, Mrs. Hannigan passed away. Her estate attorney requested that their funds be back, and we paid them back a few days after they requested it.
Does the name Apple Ridge ring a bell to you?
Yes.
What is Apple Ridge?
Apple Ridge is a development project in Laconia.
Is it fair to say that you rolled some of the unsecured note holders into that development project?
Without records in front of me, I'm not positive the time spill.
I want to show you two letters.
Okay.
Do those two letters refresh your recollection?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is it fair to say that some of the unsecured note holders that you were trying to eliminate were rolled into Apple Ridge?
Yes.
How were they rolled into Apple Ridge?
Vis-a-vis a letter, and documentation assigning the portion of the mortgage in Apple Ridge to them.
Okay. What other individuals... Strike that, please. What individuals do you recall were rolled into Apple Ridge?
The only other one I recall would be the Wolfs, Scott and Ann Wolf.
Does Wales ring a bell to you?
Yeah. Oh, yes, Wales is this one here.
Okay, how about Miller?
I don't know.
How about Gates?
I don't recall. I wouldn't dispute either one of those. I just don't recall, and I don't have any documentation in front of me to look at.
Is it fair to say that as part of your effort to eliminate unsecured debt, unsecured note holders were rolled into mortgages?
Yes.
And the remainder would have been paid off?
Correct.
Okay. So is it fair to say that around 2005, 2006, most, if not all, were paid off?
I would say so. Without having paperwork in front of me, I don't know exact dates, but in that time frame, yes.
Or rolled into a mortgage.
One or the other.
Now, is CLNM a corporation?
Yes.
So it's CLNM Inc.?
I'm unsure.
Okay, and where were they incorporated, in which state?
I don't know. Mr. Dodge did all the incorporations and everything with CLNF.
Where was it physically located?
In Meredith, in the same building that we were in.
Okay, was that 15 Northview Drive in Meredith?
Yes.
Okay, can you describe the layout of that building and who occupied the building in June 2005?
It's a three-story building. It's about 10,000 square feet. There was Financial Resources, CLNM, Gould and Burke, who were attorneys, and I am unsure. DAC Financial Group was there, but I'm not sure what year they moved in, whether it was 2005 or later than that.
And did you have employees working for you at Financial Resources?
Yes.
Was one of the employees Rhonda Vappi?
Yes.
Did CLNM have individuals working for them?
Yes.
And Don Dodge ran the company, correct?
Yeah, Don was the incorporator, the owner, everything. I had no direct control or involvement in CLNM.
And he worked at that location?
Yes.
And are you familiar with Diane Smith?
Yes.
And what was her role with CLNM?
She was Don's right-hand person, had been for 20-plus years.
Okay. How would Financial Resources interact with CLNM when it involved a mortgage?
The mortgages would, CLNM would be servicing the mortgages. So if it was a non-construction mortgage, there'd be very little in interaction. If it was a construction mortgage, those construction disbursement requests went through Financial Resources and then up to CLNM.
Was an attorney involved in those mortgages?
At the initial closing, yes, but afterwards, no. Prior to the closing, CLNM had very little involvement. Post-closing, the attorneys had no involvement. So up until the closings, the attorneys were involved. After that, it was just CLNM.
Okay, and how would the flow of funds work for a closed mortgage?
The flow of funds, you're talking about CLNM mortgages, is that correct?
The interaction of CLNM and Financial Resources.
Monies generally would be sent from a private investor to CLNM.
And then how would the money flow from there with respect to the mortgage closing?
Monies that were necessary for the closing would flow down to the attorney's office, borrowers, and or any payoffs that had to happen at the closing.
And then where would the money flow from the closing?
Post-closing, if it was a construction loan, it would flow from CLNM to the lenders for interest payments and to the subcontractors, whoever was doing the construction on the property.
So hypothetically, if there was a mortgage for $100,000 and there were closing fees, would $100,000 be sent to Gould and Burke for the closing?
Two different things. If it was a conventional closed-end loan, yes. If it was a construction loan, no.
Did CLNM service residential loans?
A few of them, yes.
Okay, was CLNM, or was Financial Resources cited for that?
Yes.
By the state of New Hampshire?
Yeah, I don't know if cited is the right word. They asked about it. I don't know if cited is the right word. But
okay, how did Financial Resources handle that scenario?
The banking department in one of their audits found some residential mortgages from CLNM that they were servicing. At the time, I believe the number they were servicing was 5, which was above the allowable number of 4, where they wouldn't have to be under scrutiny. But from the time the audit actual happened until the actual report came out, which was 3 or 4 months later, 2 of those mortgages were paid off. So now CLNM was under the 4 residential limit in New Hampshire, and to the best of my knowledge, the banking department did not pursue it any further.
Okay. Were you notified that it was illegal to work for an unlicensed servicer?
I don't recall such a notification, but I
was CLNM Inc. a licensed loan servicer?
No.
What is a net funded loan?
I'm unsure. A net funded, can you give me a little more?
Okay. Let me ask you this. When funds came into CLNM from private lenders, was some money held at CLNM?
Yes.
Okay. What was the money held at CLNM?
Monies held at CLNM would have been for any construction loan. and or interest reserve if there was an interest reserve in the loan.
Okay. So the monies that were distributed to Gould and Brook for the closing were the closing costs and fees associated with the closing?
Correct. Plus any payoffs that may have been necessary at the closing.
Prior to the institution, prior to the development of CLNM, formation of CLNM, how would you solicit private lenders?
I'm not sure of any particular dates. Word of mouth, and then we began. We bought a list from Dun and Bradstreet of people that already owned private mortgages, and we'd send a mailer to them, and we did that for many years.
When did you start that process?
I don't know exactly when.
I'd like to show you a letter, please. Could you review it?
Sure.
You offered this for a question of recollection, or is this going to be introduced?
I'd like to introduce it.
Okay.
Does that refresh your recollection on the timing of your solicitation for private loan money?
This particular letter is dated May of 04, but it is possible that we actually did solicitations earlier than this date. I just don't know. I know that it was during this period of time that we started it.
Did you write that letter?
Essentially, yes.
Okay, I'd like to introduce it. And I'd like to introduce the other two letters, if I could.
Suspend for just a minute.
Thank you. Do you recall seeking legal advice with Mr. Maloney with respect to soliciting private lenders?
Yes.
And what was the advice you received?
We had numerous conversations about it, but he reviewed the letters that we were sending out to make sure that they were in compliance with laws.
Okay. So that you wouldn't run afoul with the law?
Correct.
Was mail solicitation your only method?
We did have a website, but the only people that could get on that were people that were already on our mailing list. They had to get a password to get on there.
When did you start the website?
I honestly don't know. It would have been, I just don't know, 06, 07, I'm not sure.
Why was the website password protected?
Because we only wanted people on there that we knew who were, that were our clients already, that we already knew.
When you sent somebody a mail solicitation, what generally happened next?
If a person responded, I talked to them on the telephone and got them on our mailing list. And we would then send them, as different transactions became available, we would mail a 2-to-5-page summary and or email them a 2-to-5-page summary of the of potential transactions.
Were you directing the prospect to a particular loan, or would you let them pick the loan?
Generally, we let them pick their own loans.
I'm sorry.
Generally, they picked their own.
Okay, so you gave the prospective lender a choice of loans?
Yes.
Was this type of transaction typical in the lending business?
Unsure. I'm
private lending, I mean.
Yeah, you're asking me if it's typical, and the answer is I believe so. I believe that's how most of the private lenders that I know of do some business. But to say typical in the industry, it's hard for me to make that call.
I guess I wasn't clear on my question. Is private lending something that's common or uncommon?
There are literally billions of dollars of private lending money every year.
And is this, would you consider this to be nationwide?
Yes.
Now, generally what happened after you sent the various loan choices to the prospective lender?
If a prospective lender was interested in a specific loan choice, then we would send out a full underwriting package, which generally included appraisals, credit reports, tax returns, loan applications, those sort of things.
Did you say tax returns?
Generally, yes.
Credit history?
Yes.
Was the credit history drawn on a typical credit history company?
Yeah, we used Credit Bureau Services of New Hampshire, I believe. It's the same one that most of the banks use.
And who was the appraiser?
We used various appraisers depending on what state and what property and what type of property.
Was there one appraiser in particular that was frequently engaged?
In New Hampshire, we used Phil Corcus quite a bit.
Okay. Did you review his appraisals?
From time to time, yes.
Okay. Did you consider them to be fair?
Yes.
Okay. Were you aware of any licensing issues with Mr. Did you pronounce his name Corcus?
Corcus.
Corcus.
Yes. He did have a licensing issue, and he came and talked to me about it. And I don't recall the substance of the conversation, but I did recall that I was comfortable when he got done.
You were comfortable when he got done?
Mm-hmm.
So you continued to engage him?
For a short period of time after he his license. I'm not sure when he had a license issue, the exact dates.
Was Financial Resources a fraudulent company, would you say?
Financial Resources, but I acted fraudulently. I don't know how I would say yes or no in that particular statement.
Did Financial Resources have a legitimate income stream?
Yes.
In that early period of the 2000s, from 2000 to 2005, did it have a legitimate income stream?
Yes.
What was it comprised of?
A combination of commissions from brokerage loans and spreads. If you're talking pre-2005, for example, a promissory note might be at 12%, and we might reloan the money back out at 18%. So there would be a spread there for legitimate income.
Was there a standard loan-to-value percentage that you utilized in your private lender?
Too broad a question. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be vague. It's just a broad question. If you're talking about on a piece of real estate, generally we try to stay at 70% of the value or less.
And the typical, when CLNM came online, what was the typical terms of a note mortgage?
Usually 1 year, 10 to 14%, maybe 70% loan to value or less.
Did Financial Resources in the early 2000s to 2005 have a profit?
On paper, we did. Yeah, we pay taxes every year. So.
Okay, when you say on paper you did, what do you mean by that?
Meaning that there was some debt, and I am unsure. Without any paperwork in front of me, this is awful hard, Mr. Spill, I'm sorry. I believe that, to the best of my knowledge, Financial Resources was profitable, but I'm not 100% positive.
Did you pay yourself a salary?
Yes.
How many people did you employ during this time frame?
I don't know. 2005. Without any records, I don't know.
Did you employ a Mr. Thomas McNeil?
Yes.
What was his role with the company?
He was in, his job was to underwrite and oversee commercial private lending.
Was he involved in developing the loan-to-value ratios on the properties?
He would look at appraisals and go backwards. Tom McNeil was eventually, by the time like 08, 09, was going through the files and underwrite them and saying what the loan-to-values were.
Was he soliciting private lenders?
I don't believe Tom had anything to do with any private lenders. And, I mean, I think he referred a few individuals to us, but I don't think he ever was soliciting any private lenders.
Was he an employee or a subcontractor?
Tom, I believe, was a W-2 employee.
How about Jeff Long?
Both. Jeff Long, when he was out in Tulsa, was a independent contractor. He came to New Hampshire, worked in a salary position for about 2 years, and then moved back to Oklahoma, I think, in 04 or 05, and went back to being an independent contractor.
Was he an officer of the company?
He may have been an officer of the company during those the years that he was here as a salaried person. But I don't recall.
What was his role with the company?
He worked for me for almost 15 years. It changed from time to time.
What were the various roles?
Mortgage originator, then he was involved with the cash flow consultant group. He came up here and was in charge of commercial lending for a couple of years. Then he went back to Tulsa and became a mortgage originator again, independent mortgage originator.
How about Richard Rollick? Did he work for you?
For many years.
Was he an employee or a subcontractor?
Employee.
And what was his role?
Jack of all trades. He physically evolved into doing the bill paying and stuff for financial resources. He would literally just help out in any area from answering the telephones to photocopying to whatever.
How about Tom Hawley?
No, he was not an employee of the company.
Was he a subcontractor?
Yes.
What was his role with the company?
His role was to do two things. He was in charge of doing inspections and such on real estate construction in New Hampshire. And in addition, he was ended up building stuff that I was involved with, development projects that I was involved in.
What was the name of Financial Resources at its inception?
Originally, it was Financial Resources and Assistance of the Lakes Region, Inc. Then we had changed the name, it was the same corporation, but we changed the name to Financial Resources
National?
National, thank you. Financial Resources National for a brief period of time. We found out we could not get an FHA license with the word national in the name, so we changed it to Financial Resources Mortgage. But it was the same corporation throughout. It was just a DBA.
It was Financial Resources Mortgage, Inc., correct?
Correct.
What was the time period of the name Financial Resources National?
I don't have any dates, but it seems like it was about a year. I'm not 100% positive.
Would this be approximately in the mid-2000s?
Yes.
Okay. Did that reflect your desire to expand your business?
Certainly, because we went from the Lakes Region to National. At that point in time, we were probably doing business in 12 or 15 states, something like that.
And about this time frame, mid-2000s, did you expand Financial Resources' role in land development?
Financial Resources really didn't do any land development. I did some land development. Scott Farah did, but Financial Resources as an entity, I don't think, did much in the land development area.
Explain that, please. the difference between your role as an individual and the company's role?
The company would, if it was involved with land development, would have been, well, you know, let me back up and start over again. Because I was the company and the company was me, there was certainly plenty of intertwinement between financial resources and Scott Fair and any land development that was done. As a simple example, we were paying Tom Hawley weekly from financial resources, and Tom was working on some land development projects that I was involved with as an individual. So really, it's so intertwined, I think I was incorrect in trying to separate it.
Well, in fact, you were soliciting private lenders to fund the various projects that you were involved with.
Certainly.
Was one of the development projects you were involved with Provincial Park?
Yes.
What was Provincial Park?
A 100-unit apartment complex.
Is it also known as Apple Ridge?
Yes.
Were you involved in a project called Abbott Village?
Not as a developer, but from a soliciting of funds and lending standpoint, yes.
How about Colonial Drive in Moultonboro?
As a developer and a solicitor of funds, both.
I'm sorry, you trailed off again.
Sorry. Developer and a solicitor of funds, both on that one.
How about Beaver Pond Estates?
Same, developer and solicitor as well.
How about Lilac Valley?
Developer and solicitor.
How about White Birches Condominium?
Is that Joe Austin?
Yes.
Okay. Only as a solicitor of funds on that one.
How about Vachi Manukian?
Some of his projects, just as a solicitor. One project we were in the process of raising funds for that we were both development and solicitation.
Was CLNM Inc. a fraudulent company from its inception?
CLNM Inc. was set up for two purposes, one of them fraudulent and one of them not. The fraudulent portion was to have a line of credit accessible. The non-fraudulent was to service loans.
At the inception of CLNM Inc. in June of 2005, did you engage in business transactions as financial resources with CLNM that were fraudulent?
Yes, I mean it was the loaning of the money.
Did you sell a series of notes to CLNM?
Yes.
Okay. I wonder if you recall the sale of a factoring note involving a company called Creative Couriers.
Yes, it was a it was to create a paper trail that was to be collateral for the line of credit. So it was set up as a purchase and sale agreement as collateral for the line of credit.
And was that sale in the amount of approximately $730,000?
Yes.
Was that note worth $730,000?
No.
Did Mr. Connor know that?
No.
Did he know that that note existed?
I do not know.
Was there the sale of a writ of attachment on Boston Hill consummated with CLNM?
Yes.
Was the purchase price $4.1 million?
That's what it said on the paper.
Was that a valid number?
Not at that time.
Okay, why was that not a valid number?
Because that was a percentage of ownership in a project that was to be built. If the project had been fully built, then that probably was an accurate value, but since the project hadn't even been started at that point in time, that was it was a fraudulent number.
Okay. Can you describe the Boston Hill project?
Yeah, it was a project down in Shrewsbury, Mass. And a gentleman by the name of Charlie Sanders or Sanderson, I'm not sure which, was going to do a big, huge development. It is going to have apartment complexes, malls. I don't remember, just a big, it was supposed to be like a $100 million development.
Was that ever built?
To my knowledge, only part of it was built.
Do you know what the approximate value of the project was at the time of the sale of the note in 2005?
No.
Sale of the attachment?
No, I don't.
Did you receive that attachment or an interest in Boston Hill from Gary Coyne?
No. Well, possibly. It was way back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and Gary was involved with Boston Hill. I know that I lent some money to Boston Hill for a piece of ownership. So Gary had a piece and I had a piece, and I'm not sure if there was any, I just don't know the answer. I just, broad strokes.
With respect to the Creative Courier and Boston Hill transactions, who drew up the paperwork?
I believe it was Mr. Dodge.
Okay. Did Mr. Dodge know, in your opinion, that those transactions were fraudulent?
In my opinion, Mr. Dodge knew that there was not sufficient value, that those numbers were inflated, yes.
Was there, did Financial Resources also engage in the movement of money off its books onto the books of CLNF?
Yes.
And could you describe how that took place in 2005?
Yes. There were some loans that were being serviced by Financial Resources, construction loans, that still had monies that should be dispersed. Since Financial Resources did not have the funds to do that, CLNM would loan Scott Farah a loan for a day. Scott Farah would deposit the money into Financial Resources account. Financial Resources would write a check to CLNM for the construction balance on the particular loan and send copies of that documentation to the lender to say, Financial Resources is no longer servicing this loan, CLNM is. Here is a copy of the check showing the monies going over to CLNM.
So was there also debt shifted off the books of Financial Resources onto CLNM?
Yes, because the lines of credit were, the line of credit was used to pay down the promissory notes and other debt and preferred shareholders over time.
Would you give me a time frame for that practice?
Okay, that commenced with the inception of CLNM, correct?
Correct.
I'm sorry?
2005.
2005, yes. Did the money that you gave to CLNM that was left over on the construction loan, did that stay at CLNM or did it come back to Financial Resources?
I don't know how to answer the question because there was a lot of money in there. So did some money come back through? Yes. Did some money stay with CLNM? Yes. Did some money go to disperse to the construction? Yes. So it's it did all of those things.
Okay. Did it come back in the form of the line of credit?
Yes.
What was the line of credit?
What was it? You mean the amount?
Can you describe what it was in terms of its, in terms of it as a document?
Yeah. Mr. Dodge created all of the documentation for the line of credit, and when funds were needed on the line of credit, there would be a promissory note in series that was created for that particular disbursement.
Okay. Were the disbursements for the sale of Creative Couriers?
No. Creative Couriers and the Boston Hill, to the best of my recollection, were set up there as, well, you know, Mr. Spill, I apologize. I just plain don't remember. It was 2005. I just don't remember.
Well, the line of credit was drawn on periodically, correct?
Correct, yes.
And what, at its inception, what was the amount of the line of credit?
$10 million.
And you described earlier two transactions involving Boston Hill and Creative Courier.
Correct.
Did the money come over for those note sales, those transactions simultaneously, or was it over a period of time?
Over a period of time, monies came through. It was not, there was not one big, huge lump that I, to the best of my recollection, was over a period of time.
Were those transactions, those periodic draws on the line of credit, documented?
Yes.
Okay. Were they documented as part of the line of credit?
Yes.
Okay. And at some point, the line of credit went beyond the money owed to Financial Resources by CLNM, correct?
I don't understand the question, I'm sorry.
In other words, the two sales of the notes was for a set amount, correct?
Correct.
Did you draw beyond that set amount?
Yes.
And why did you do that?
I don't know. I mean, it just was as the monies were needed, we just drew on it.
And the monies were needed for what?
Running the business, but also paying off the debt that we mentioned previously and to make the interest payments as well on this debt.
Interest to who?
To the lenders that had lent the money.
But you said, I think you said earlier that the interest payments were made through CLNM.
Some of them were made through Financial Resources in the 05-06 era.
And you made some of them as well?
Yes.
How did the bank accounts work? Did CLNM have its own bank account?
Yes.
Where was it located?
Citizens Bank.
And did Financial Resources have its own bank account?
Yes.
And where was it located?
It was Laconia Savings, and then it went to Citizens, and I'm not sure what year.
And when you drew on the line of credit, how would that physically work?
There'd be a wire. Generally, there would be a wire from CLNM's account to Financial Resources account.
Was it always on the line of credit draw distributed to your account, or was it distributed elsewhere?
There were a few times where it was distributed elsewhere, but I'm unsure of when and where without having any paperwork in front of me.
Okay. For what purpose would it be distributed elsewhere?
For purposes directed by Financial Resources. The one that I can recall is that Financial Resources used an American Express card to pay lots of the bills, and it would be $20,000, $30,000 in a month. And so I do recall one time, it could have been more than once, where CLNM, the line of credit, was used to pay that bill.
You've listed the various subdivision projects that you were involved with. Who was responsible for selling the various homes, condominiums, and land associated with those projects?
The ones that I was involved with?
Yes.
As a developer in that capacity, is that what you're asking, sir?
Yes.
We would hire a realtor to do that, to sell whatever the real estate was.
Okay. And with respect to those subdivision projects, were there any sales?
The ones that we talked about previously, no.
Okay. When did you realize that the real estate market was turning down?
I don't have a specific date, sir. I'm sorry.
Approximately.
I don't know, maybe 09, 08. I mean, I kept thinking that it had hit the bottom, even right up until when the collapse of Financial Resources happened. I thought that, I personally thought it had hit the bottom and was heading back up again.
Earlier you described money from private lenders going to CLNM for these various projects.
Mm-hmm.
Who, to your knowledge, was watching or keeping track of that amount of money coming into CLNM?
I guess I'll try and answer it as a specific transaction. What would happen is, as a check would come in to CLNM, then somebody in the offices, either Diane or one of her assistants, would send a letter back to the private lender that said, we have received a check for $100,000 on the Smith deal.
Okay, and the monies coming in for the various mortgages were accumulated in one single account?
I believe CLNM had, well, I know that they had two different accounts, but they were both in the same bank. And they would, it was a for reconciliation purposes, because there were so many transactions happening, and Don didn't want to try and reconcile the checking account each quarter. So he would use one account for 3 months and then switch and use the other account for 3 months so that he didn't have to try and reconcile.
Was the money coming in from lenders commingled with the various projects?
Yes.
And who is keeping track of the amount of obligation on a month on a monthly basis of financial resources?
Don.
And who is keeping track of the account balance for the lenders?
Don, you're talking about the CLNM account?
Yes.
Yeah, Don was.
Are you aware whether there were sufficient funds on hand at the account at all times to pay the obligations on the loans?
There was never, I mean, maybe there was at one point, but from the time that I tapped into the line of credit, from that point forward, there would have been insufficient funds to pay everything.
Did the various lenders know that the money was commingled?
No. Commingled? Yes. That financial resource, or that I was doing a line of credit? No.
So it's your testimony that representations were not made that the lender money would be escrowed and segregated?
Could very well have been made. Representations of that nature could very well have been made. I just don't recall that they were or weren't made.
And that was not the case, correct?
The truth was, no, they were commingled. Was there any separate escrow accounts? No.
So if no sales were being made in these various projects that you were involved with, how were the costs of these projects maintained?
Through the, you mean once they went upside down would be through the line of credit? Is that what you're asking?
How did you keep the various projects afloat?
First of all, there was a certain amount of interest set aside within them, and so that's how we did it, was through the interest that was set aside in the initial note.
Eventually, did you go beyond the amount of interest that was set aside?
On some of them, absolutely.
Okay, so what was the source of that money?
From CLNM.
Okay, and what was the source of CLNM's money?
Oh, from the investors.
Okay, so is it fair to say that you were shuffling money to the various projects?
Yes, sir.
To keep the projects going?
Yes.
Did you anticipate that any of these projects that you previously ascribed would be profitable?
Yes.
At what point did you believe that they would not be profitable?
I truly believe that we had reached the bottom of the market in summer of 2009, and I thought that they were all going to be profitable.
By 2009, though, your line of credit was up to $20 million?
Approximately, yes.
And how were you going to pay that debt?
Well, there was the real estate developments, and then I was in extensive negotiations with a company, they were in Virginia or South Carolina, I forget which, that was going to do about it. It was told us that they were going to come in with $100 million to do hard money loans.
Was Mr. Dodge aware of the accumulation of the line of credit?
Yes, he kept track of it.
Did he speak to you about the line of credit?
We talked about it often.
How often?
Very. I don't mean to be vague, but I talked to Don 5, 6, 7 times a day, 5 days a week. So, I mean, it certainly came up more than once.
What's your earliest recollection of that topic coming up?
I just don't have an early, so as long as the line of credit was there, we talked about it.
And what would he say to you?
We need to work on paying it back, and what are we doing? And we talked about everything, I mean, including the developments, including this company that was coming on board, supposedly. I talked to Don literally about everything to do with the business. There wasn't anything we did not discuss in extensive detail.
How did the trust mechanism for the real estate development evolve?
Don is an expert in trusts, and has been doing stuff with trusts for, I don't know, 40 years maybe. And so he is very enamored with the trust vehicle. The biggest thing about a trust vehicle versus a company is that there's no public records of a trust vehicle, of beneficiaries and such like that. Was it Don that came up with the idea of using trust? Was it me? Was it some combination thereof? I honestly don't know. I don't recall. But Don certainly knew a heck of a lot about trusts, and he actually drew up most of the trusts.
Do you recall a meeting at which you discussed possibly forming some type of entity to do these various real estate deals?
I don't recall such a conversation. One certainly could have happened, but I just don't recall such a conversation.
And who made the decision to utilize the trust entity, a trust mechanism?
Unclear. It would have been, I just don't recall. It would have been, certainly both of us would have been very involved with the decision.
Did you believe that you were running afoul of any laws in the formation of those trusts?
Of the trusts? No, I did not believe I was.
In your real estate development that you testified to, would you acquire the land to develop?
Generally, well, in fact, I think always, there was a trust set up, and the trust would be the owner of the land.
And generally, who were the trustees and the beneficiaries?
Trustees were different. On a project that I was involved with, generally what would happen, for example, Apple Ridge with Gary Coyne, because we were working on it together, he would be a 50% beneficiary, and then I would be a 50% beneficiary. But on advice that I learned about 20 years ago, I actually made my wife the beneficiary instead of myself.
And why is that?
Because of the litigious nature of the mortgage industry, I would be sued from time to time, and this would help protect the asset.
In which real estate development projects was your wife named as trustee?
None. Oh, excuse me. Apple Ridge, the Provincial Park one. I don't know if she was named as trustee or Brolyard stayed trustee the whole time. I'm not positive. I know that Attorney Brolyard was the trustee.
In what real estate development deals, projects, was she named as beneficiary?
Apple Ridge, Lilac Valley, Cook Lane, because that was the LBSF.
What's LBSF?
That was Larry Baldy, Susan Farah.
Okay, and who was Larry Baldy?
He's a developer in the Weirs.
Okay. Were you in business with Mr. Baldy?
We did some joint ventures on some development projects.
Which projects were they?
Cook Lane, Colonial Drive, and Lilac Valley.
Was Colonial Drive also known as the church property?
Yes.
Can you explain that, please?
Originally, the property was part of the Center Harbor Christian Church, but it was deeded off. It was we put in a road and made it into a 14-lot subdivision.
Were you ever a trustee or a beneficiary of the Land Development Trust?
No.
Was Mr. Coyne?
Yes. Apple Ridge. I think an Ossipee project. I just don't recall that having it in front of me.
How about Beaver Pond Estates?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I mixed up. Gary was never a beneficiary in Apple Ridge. He was a beneficiary in Beaver Ponds.
And who was the trustee of Beaver Pond Estates Trust?
Attorney Gould.
With respect to the Abbott Village, who was the builder of that project?
Yves Tanguay.
And with respect to White Birch's condominium, who was the builder in that project?
Joe Austin.
And with respect to Bachi Manukian, who was the builder in those projects?
Bachdales.
Did you use the trust mechanism for those developers?
I mean, as from a lending standpoint?
Yes.
Yes. Excuse me.
And with respect to White Birch's, Tanguay, and Manukian, was the land deeded to the trust?
Not the lending trust, but I don't know, recall whether those were in trust or not.
With respect to Apple Ridge, the church property, Beaver Pond Estates, and Lilac Valley, was the land deeded to the trust?
Yes.
Was that so you could control the development?
No, it was just an instrument. Again, going back to a estate planning course that I'd taken way back when with an attorney back, I don't know, 20 years ago, the advice was to always set up each individual piece of real estate as its own trust or its own corporation. So you always set up each one separately.
If your family member, your wife, was a beneficiary of these trusts, did you stand to profit from these developments?
Yes.
And how did you stand to profit from the Tanguay development, the White Birches development, and the Manuki developments?
Let me back up and take them one at a time if I could. Tanguay, we were just the lender. White Birches, we were just the lender. On Manukian, he had a number of projects. Generally, it was just as a lender. And then there was one project that I began working with him on. Where there was going to be a beneficial interest.
So is it fair to say you had two main ways of developing real estate, one through the trust mechanism and one through direct ownership of property to the developer?
I guess so, but I mean, I was not being the developer with, let's like Tanguay or Joe Austin, so. I guess I'm unclear on the question. I'm sorry.
In the Tanguay, in the Abbott Home project, who owned the land?
Eves did. I don't know if he had a trust or corporation, but it was Eves' company.
And in the White Birches condominium project, who owned the land?
Joe Austin.
And in the Manukian projects, who owned the land?
Vajtay or one of his entities owned all of it except for the one project that I was involved with.
Okay. So you would, on those projects, you would stand to profit based on the repayment of the loan back from the developers?
No, actually, I'd already profited with the closing of the loans. So there has been no additional profits unless I had ended up doing mortgages for the ultimate buyers.
And to the contrary, with the trust mechanism where you had trustees and beneficiaries, you stood to profit from the sale of the project that was built out.
That's correct.
Prior to the creation of CLNM, had you engaged in any of those types of projects?
Yes. Apple Ridge was before CLNM. In fact, I'm sure it was.
But Apple Ridge was never actually developed, correct?
No.
Correct?
We just got all the permitting and stuff.
Now, with respect to the subdivisions, these various real estate projects, who was involved in actually building them out and permitting them and getting them approved?
We have to break them out separately, but...
What was Gary Coyne's role?
Gary was a person that generally he would go find a piece of land, get it under agreement, get it permitted, get it ready for construction. And he did that on the projects that he was involved with.
And what was Lawrence Baldy's role?
He was a builder-developer, so he was somebody who would be in charge of actually putting in foundations and houses and roads and such like that.
And what was Tom Hawley's role?
Tom was just a builder that would physically be a general contractor on the project.
Now, when you engaged in these various real estate projects, was there any planning done?
Yes.
What type of planning was done?
Well, it would depend on the project, but generally we had an engineering firm would go ahead and get the plans, design them, and then get it approved with whatever entities.
And what types of permitting and approvals did you need for these subdivisions, if you can recall?
Generally, on a subdivision, you would have to go through the town, and if it was above a certain number of lots, I believe you had to get state approval. I'm not positive, though.
And did you oversee the build-out of infrastructure?
Yes.
What types of infrastructure?
Depending on the project, but sewer, water, roads, foundations.
So these were very large undertakings?
Yes, multi-million dollars.
And how would you budget these various projects?
Get bids from contractors and such prior to construction.
At some point, was Abbott Village running a deficit?
Yes.
At what point?
I don't know without having any documentation.
What was your solution for Abbott Village running a deficit?
Lent them more money.
Okay. At some point, did you believe that the project would fail?
You know, I don't recall any specific date that I believe the project would fail.
And who budgeted the church property?
I guess I did. I mean, it was just working on the different construction things. I oversaw that development.
Were any homes built there?
Two.
And who bought those homes?
I don't know. Was it one of them was bought by a private individual? I don't know who it was. The other one was actually put into Don's name to pay off the private lender so that there would be a lower interest rate. To the best of my knowledge, it's still in his name. I'm not sure, though.
And where did the money come from for that sale?
From Salem M. I mean, it was ultimately it came from whatever bank it was. I think it was IndyMac, but I'm not positive.
Was that project running a deficit? In other words, had you gone beyond the had you gone beyond the set aside interest?
Yes.
How about Lilac Valley? Was that project running a deficit?
I'd have to look at the records. If it was not running a deficit, it was close, but I'm not positive. It may still have been in the black. I'm not sure.
How many homes did you build on Lilac Valley?
It was either two or three. I'm not sure.
Did those homes sell?
No. Not to my knowledge.
How many homes was it approved for?
I believe 60, but it may have been more than that or less than that.
How about Beaver Pond Estates? Was that running a deficit?
Yes.
Was the interest allotment depleted and gone beyond its allotted amount?
Yes.
And how about White Birches? Were any homes ever built on White Birches?
Yes, I believe there was two, one building, but two condos that was completed. I'm pretty sure.
Was that project running a deficit?
Yes.
And how about the Manukian projects? Were they ever completed?
They were the one that I was involved with was just started.
Which project was that?
was down in, I don't even know, I think it was Bedford. I just don't remember the name of it, sir.
Does Tinker Road ring a bell?
That could very well have been that project.
And was that in Nashua?
Yes.
Did you commit $3.2 million loan to Tinker Road?
I don't know the exact amount, but that sounds about right.
Did you ever pay any of that money out for construction?
No, I think, I don't know. I just don't know. If it was, it was a small amount.
But you accumulated that amount of money through the private lenders?
Whatever money that was accumulated was through private lenders. I do not know the exact amount without any records.
Were the private lenders aware that these projects were running a deficit?
I do not believe so.
Okay. Were the private lenders aware that money not designated for projects was being utilized to pay for those projects?
No.
Were the lenders made aware that there were no sales?
Yeah, they would have been, because they would have, if a sale had happened, then they would have been paid off.
Were the lenders made aware that there was permitting and approval holdup and non-compliance?
On which project?
Let's say Beaver Pond Estates.
To the best of my knowledge, no, the lenders were not informed that.
Were all loans recorded simultaneously with the closings?
On Beaver Pond, no.
Generally speaking?
Generally speaking, yes.
On Beaver Pond Estates?
No.
Why were they not recorded simultaneously with the closing?
Because there was not the, the AG approval was not in place.
Were the private lenders made aware that the recording did not take place?
No.
As part of the model that you set up for the private lending for these various projects, when the money came into CLNM, was interest paid at the time the check was received or at the time of the closing?
It was paid from the time the check was received. It would be paid the exact, but within the next month it would have been started making payments.
Was that in all cases or towards the end of the existence of financial resources?
Towards the end.
And why was it done towards the end and not in the beginning?
Because that would entice people to leave the money with CLNM and to put the money in with CLNM early.
What other efforts, if you will, did you employ to entice lenders to stay in?
I don't know.
Were there complaints received about loans that didn't close?
Yes.
What was your solution for that?
Try and get them to do a different loan.
Were there complaints received about the progress of various projects?
I'm sure there were. I don't recall any specifics.
Okay. What was your solution for those complaints?
I don't recall. I'm sorry.
If a loan was not performing, in other words, not closed or not paying interest, did you have a solution for that?
Generally, I would pick up the payments on that one. Is that what you're... there was a lot of loans that we paid that out of CLNM money, making payments that were non-performing loans. We started making the payments on them.
Is it fair to say that you wanted to keep the appearance that the business was afloat?
Yes.
Were you settling litigation matters so that information about those matters would not be public?
Not necessarily. Each litigation was taken on its own face value, and we would settle or not settle as a function of what the advice for that attorney gave me.
Was the Lattice matter settled under a confidential settlement agreement?
I don't recall.
Was the Stone matter settled?
Yes.
Do you know when about that was settled?
'05, '06, I'm not sure exactly when.
Where did the money come from to settle the stone match?
From the Northview Drive Trust. There's a cell tower on the property, and the cell tower was sold.
Okay. Was that settled confidentially?
Yes.
Was there a confidentiality agreement between the parties?
Yes.
I would like to suspend for the noon hour if we could. Following the noon hour, I'd like to present a PowerPoint and possibly some additional questions.
I have some questions also. I'm going to reserve those to the end. We will reconvene at 12:45.
Here, do you want to stop this?
Thank you.